Chapter 39. Arion. The flaps of Arion's black coat opened behind him as he dropped from the second-floor balcony and hit the ground directly between the approaching convoy and Amaricia. Amaricia cried out in surprise and dropped her sack. Street kids everywhere dove for their cubbyholes. Their leader, clearly startled by Arion's sudden entrance, whipped out his large hammer as the rest of his underlings fought to brandish whatever crude weapons they had stowed beneath their threadbare garb.
Arion? What are you—
Before Amaricia could finish her sentence, the tribal chief howled sharply and charged. Arion sidestepped the heavy implement and watched as the large head of the hammer swung to his left. The boy was stronger than he looked. Using the momentum of his first swing, the kid swung back for another try, this time aiming for Arion's head. Arion ducked and spun, letting the heavy maul hit nothing but air. The boy didn't stop. He continued to attack, howling as he went. Amaricia was hollering from the side for them to stop, but neither one had any intention of doing so. Arion never once pulled his blades. Instead, he continued to dance around the room, weaving in and around each swing of the hammer, while at the same time allowing his assailant to wear himself out. The boy wouldn't be able to keep it up much longer, and Arion knew he wasn't about to stop of his own volition. The boy couldn't. His entire tribe was watching. His reputation as their leader was on the line. Arion hated embarrassing the kid like this, but he didn't see that they were leaving him much of a choice. Besides, he didn't take kindly to the threatening way he had approached Amaricia.
Arion, don't hurt him!
Having chased Arion from one side of the open floor to the other, with nothing to show for it, the tribal chief was beginning to look a bit winded. He left himself unprotected on each of his backswings. Waiting for the right moment, Arion sidestepped the hammer once again and then kicked the boy square in the chest, hard enough to send him flying across the room with a different sort of howl. His hammer flew through the air in the opposite direction and into a pile of chairs in the corner. The other boys ran to help their chief to his feet, but no one attempted another approach. Arion headed across the room to where Amaricia was standing, wide-eyed, and a bit more upset than he would have expected from someone whose life he had just saved. Instead of throwing her arms around his neck and thanking him for her rescue, she flew by him and threw her arms around the street thug instead.
"Are you all right?"
she asked as she reached down to help him up. He pushed her hand away and growled. Arion rolled his eyes. Didn't she know any better than to treat the boy like a sick puppy in front of his tribe? She turned and planted both fists firmly on her hips, fixing Arion with a harsh glare.
"What do you think you're doing?"
Arion didn't move, quite astounded at her unappreciative statement and angry demeanor. "Saving your life. What does it look like? What do you think you're doing, coming down here alone in the middle of the night? Are you trying to get yourself killed?" Arion kept his eyes on the growing crowd of kids on the far side of the room as they started coming out of the woodwork, literally. They crawled out from under the tables, from behind the support posts, through back doorways, even small holes in the walls. They were all staring at him in wonder. Some were pointing, others whispering.
"And what exactly did you think you were saving me from?"
she asked, her fists still maintaining their spot on her hips.
"From that bruiser behind you with the nasty-looking sledgehammer."
"You mean Howler? The boy whose rib cage you very nearly squashed?"
The chief leaned his neck back and howled.
"I am no boy!"
Arion could see where he got his name.
"Oh, shut up, Sedgwick. You are a boy. Now, do you want this food or not?"
Amaricia left the young chieftain standing there with an angry pout on his face to collect her sack of pilfered goods. Even with a large sack of food in her hand, it wasn't Amaricia everyone was staring at.
You're him, aren't you, mister?
One of the little boys at the front suddenly asked.
You're Death's Shadow.
Arion smiled. He hadn't heard that name in a very long time. Not since he wasn't much older than most of them. It was the street name given to him by the guild, and justly earned. I am. Howler gulped. Arion walked across the room. Dust shot up from beneath his black boots as the loose floorboards bent under his weight. Now will someone kindly tell me what is going on here? Amaricia crossed her arms up under her breasts.
Well, I would have, if you hadn't decided to interfere.
Some of the boys gasped at the way she addressed him. Arion almost laughed, but thought better of it after gauging the expression on her face.
Interfere? And what was I supposed to do, pray tell, when I catch the Queen's lady-in-waiting sneaking around the palace in the middle of the night, plundering the food stores, and riding off like a common burglar?
You were to trust she had a reason for what she was doing. Now it was Arian's turn to cross his arms.
And that reason is?
None of your business. Arian sighed in exasperation. His eyes narrowed as he studied her face. She obviously wasn't budging. If there is one thing he knew from experience, when a woman made up her mind, there was precious little he was going to be able to do to change it. Taking a step back, he gestured for her to continue.
Thank you.
Without waiting for a response from him, she turned around and started handing out the food and blankets. The boys and girls started clawing at the bag to get their hands on the supplies until Howler stepped in and, after cuffing a couple on the back of the head, he called a halt long enough to divvy out the goods himself. Arion remembered what that was like, having to be responsible for a group of unwanted street kids. It brought back painful memories of the friends he had given up to be where he was today. Those friends had been his family. Amaricia moved back beside Arion as she watched the tribal chief pass out the blankets and food.
Howler, is my little brother. Although, I guess he's not all that little anymore.
Your brother?
Arion glanced at Howler, then back at Amaricia. There was a resemblance. Sedgwick's hair was lighter, not quite as golden as Amaricia's, but clearly a family trait. He also shared her blue eyes. His features, though, weren't soft like hers. He had a strong chin and higher cheekbones. Now that Arion had a chance to actually compare the two, he could see the relation. The question now was, how did a lady-in-waiting to the Queen have a brother living on the streets as a common gutter snipe? Ladies-in-waiting were chosen from noble families. Had he been mistaken as to Amaricia's heritage? Not that it would have mattered to him. He wouldn't have cared had she been born to a pig farmer.
When Sedg and I were younger, we used to go with Mother to hand out food and blankets to the needy. She had a very large heart, you know.
Amaricia stared straight ahead at nothing.
Had?
Arian's question pulled her back from her musing.
There was an outbreak of cholera on board one of the ships coming back from Delga. My father was on board. He didn't realize he had caught the disease until after he had passed it to my mother. Sedg and I were lucky enough not to have caught it.
She didn't need to say more. The haunted look in her eyes was enough.
I'm sorry. I know what it's like to grow up without family.
Arion watched as Howler continued to hand out the goods.
So, how did your brother end up here? Where is your family's holdings?
Amaricia chuckled. Even as a young kid, Sedge always had the romantic notion of running away from home and joining a troop. Making friends with some of the street kids we were helping was about as close as he ever got. When our parents died, our properties were repossessed by the Crown. Arian wrinkled his brow, but didn't say anything. Apparently, our father was great at organizing parties of fashion, but not at keeping up with the family estate. Our taxes and debts were so far in arrears, Sedge and I were lucky to keep the clothes on our backs. Thankfully, I had already been chosen as a lady-in-waiting to the Queen. It was more out of a favor to my mother than anything, I believe. Even after hearing of the scandal behind our family's sudden lack of position, the Queen kept me on as her personal attendant. She has told me more than once of the deep respect she had for my mother, and how sorry she had been that my father's poor managerial choices had sullied our good name and standing within Erremore. Amaricia shrugged with a sigh. What's done is done. I'm happy, and, strangely enough, so is Sedge. Hearing her story gave Arian a new respect for her. I would say your mother's heart lives on in you. She turned and looked him in the eyes. That was a beautiful thing to say. She stared a long moment before speaking. Those grey eyes of yours really are unsettling, you know. He chuckled. My Uparkan heritage at work. You never told me how you ended up in Erremore. Did your family die as well? An embarrassed look crossed her face. Oh, sorry. That didn't exactly come out the way I had wanted. You don't have to talk about it if you don't want to. Arian knew from experience that when a woman said that, what she really meant was, I'm trying to politely tell you that you better talk to me. And after she had just opened up to him about her family's sullied past, how could he not? Not exactly, he said with a heavy sigh. But I'm dead to them, all the same. Amaricia looked puzzled. I thought the Uparka always stayed together. She shrugged. But what do I know? You're the first one I've ever met. They do. Except for the rare occasion of banishment. Arian took a deep breath. He could feel her eyes weighing his response. It was a long time ago, probably best left in the past. I can tell it bothers you. Arian lifted his head when he felt her hand enclose his own. I wouldn't ask if I didn't care. Again, another polite hint that he could keep talking. Arian was about to continue when Howler walked over and interrupted. He had his heavy mallet up over one shoulder. Thanks for the grub, sis, he said, forgoing any outward affection in front of his boys. We needed it. Food's as scarce as a warm smile these days. Seems people are hoarding what they have. There have been rumors of a possible war with Sealmar. He glanced at Arian, as if looking for confirmation. Let's pray it doesn't come to that, Arian said. But I wouldn't be lying to say the signs aren't there. He didn't want to give the boy any immediate information. Arian knew how fast news traveled in the tribes. However, a looming war with their neighbors was the very topic the High King had him and Commander Tolan discussing all night. Her brother smiled. He had a handsome face, even if he preferred to wear a gruff scowl while around his underlings. Best you were gone, sis, before you're missed. Sedgwick started toward the door, clearly wanting them to follow. We wouldn't want that queen of yours waking up without her toddy, now would we? Oh, and thanks again for the victuals. Howler opened the door and stepped aside for them to pass. I just wish you'd quit taking so many risks. One of these days you're gonna get caught,
or worse, lead the patrollers here.
You don't need to worry about us. We'll be fine.
Amaricia huffed. You'd starve, you mean? Now come here.
She engulfed him in a big hug. There were a few stifled chuckles from the kids behind them, causing an embarrassed Sedgwick to pull away with a grunt.
Amaricia just smiled. Her brother held out his hand to Arian with a roguish grin on his face.
Sorry about the warm welcome, Protector.
Arian shook the boy's hand. He had a firm grip.
Any time. If there's anything you need, don't hesitate to ask. I know a little something about the streets myself.
A little? Sedge snickered. There's not a street rat in Erremor who doesn't know the name Death's Shadow. Thanks for sparing my life.
He bowed low, showing Arian proper street deference. Arian acknowledged Howler's actions with a smile, before walking out the front door, giving Amaricia a moment alone with her brother. Arian maintained his decorum in front of the boys. It came naturally. Behind him, he could hear Sedge whispering to his sister.
You didn't tell me that Death's Shadow was your suitor.
I wouldn't exactly call him my suitor.
Well, what would you call a guy who follows you all the way into Cheapside just to make sure you're safe? Does he do that for all the girls up there at the palace?
Arian wanted to see the look on her face, but he forced himself to keep walking.
Stop it, Sedge. He can hear you.
Arian smiled at the playful tone in her voice. It sent a run of prickles up his arms.
I'll try to come by next week.
Once outside, Arian collected Amaricia's horse, and they walked up the street to where he had left his mount around the back side of a small depot.
So, what would you call me?
She glanced at him and lowered her brows.
Huh?
You said you wouldn't exactly call me your suitor.
So?
I was wondering what you would call me. She poked him in the ribs with her elbow.
I'd call you annoying.
She tried hiding her smile. Hey, you never finished your story about how you ended up in Erremor.
Arian shook his head. She had done a superb job of avoiding his question. But instead of pressing, he took a deep breath and tried to decide where to start. He guessed at the beginning.
To understand what I'm about to tell you, there's something you need to know first. As an Uparkan, there were many rules. Rules about strength and endurance. Rules about how to survive, how to fight. Rules of etiquette and social behavior. Rules on how to cook food, how to do the tasks assigned to you in order to keep the assembly functioning. But, above all the rest, he said with an air of conviction, there was one underlying law. Like the lifeblood of our entire existence, it's what defines us, what makes us strong, what keeps us separated from every other society that walks the face of Aldor. And that law is, you are never to kill another Upaka.
Arian stared up into the distance, as if watching the clouds of his memory unfold.
I wasn't particularly strong for my age, but I wasn't altogether ungifted. Upaka are trained early in the art of war and combat. It's what keeps us alive.
Amaricia never spoke or interrupted. She let Arian reveal what he wanted when he wanted. She was a great listener. He liked that about her.
When you're young and as gifted in the art of combat as I was, you tend to get a bloated sense of self-worth. And, unfortunately, mine was quite overfed. There was an older boy, Flon, sort of the unofficial leader of our small pack of kids, who took it upon himself to be the one to bring me down. He couldn't understand how someone as small as me could best someone like him. And during one of our regular sparring matches, he felt my time had finally arrived. It didn't help that the exhibition
happened to be part of his final testing for advancement, or that it had drawn a large crowd, or that the boy's father, who happened to be the leader of the Upaka, was in attendance. Flon was determined to set a strong example. Regrettably for me and him, he did. Flon fought harder than he ever had before. He had a lot to prove. As much as he tried, he was never able to push past my defense. So, in a final, desperate attempt to catch me off guard, he tried pulling off an advanced pinning maneuver he had never attempted before. It was a dangerous move, using a backspinning vertical jump. He had planned to wrap his left leg around the back of my neck and use his weight to throw me onto the ground and into a locking pin. Arian lowered his head and sighed. I should have just let him win. But I was too proud. I saw what he was about to do, and used his momentum to throw him off balance. Instead of getting his leg up and around, he fell and landed on the side of his head. The force broke his neck. Arian didn't say anything for a while, as the two continued to walk their horses down the loose cobble of the empty street. Their horses' shoes echoed off the stone, leaving behind a sense of loneliness. The moon peeked through the clouds and cast a pale glow across the way. No matter how much my mother begged or my father threatened, the final verdict was set in stone. I was to be banished. Arian stopped and got a spare piece of rope from one of Amaricia's saddlebags and tied it around his horse's neck. In hindsight, he said, I guess I can't blame my family for allowing it, or their decision not to leave with me. I can? That's horrible. Family should stick together. Arian tried to figure out the best way to explain the situation. You have to understand. The Upakan Society is our family. It's our food, our shelter, and our protection from a hostile world that wants nothing more than to be rid of us. Besides, my parents had my brother and sisters to think about. I don't blame them. Amaricia tugged on a lock of her blonde hair and started wrapping it around her finger. It still doesn't make it right. Maybe not. But they did provide me with provisions, and my father gave me what money they had saved. He said it would be enough to get me to Erremor. He figured with my particular set of skills, I'd stand a better chance here in the capital city than anywhere else. I guess he was right. Arian had directed them to an adjoining street, lined with 3- and 4-story homes, that had remained unoccupied for the last decade or two, when his horse tripped in one of the numerous potholes and whinnied. He stopped to make sure the animal hadn't done itself any permanent damage. Amaricia kept walking, not realizing he had stopped. He was busy feeling along the animal's thick tendons when he heard a muffled shriek. Arian looked up in time to see two men pulling Amaricia away from her horse and back toward a dark alley between two of the larger buildings. His hands reached for his blades on instinct. This was about to be the worst day of these sellswords' lives, Arian mused, as he ripped the dragon-hilted weapons from their sheaths and started forward.